Why do the most insecure people often seem the most arrogant? Why does achieving your greatest dreams still leave you feeling empty? Madonna, at the height of her fame, confessed something startling. Despite becoming one of the most recognized faces on earth, she woke up every day feeling she still had to prove herself. "I have to," she said, revealing the insatiable hunger at the core of ego-driven validation. This paradox haunts us all. We chase accomplishments, relationships, and recognition, believing they'll finally make us feel secure. Yet somehow, the more we achieve, the more fragile we become. What if the entire pursuit of self-esteem, high or low, is fundamentally broken? What if true freedom comes not from thinking better of yourself, but from thinking about yourself less altogether? Picture your ego as a balloon stretched to its limit. Distended, fragile, perpetually on the verge of bursting. The Apostle Paul uses this vivid image in his letter to the Corinthians, offering a precise diagnosis of why we feel emotionally fragile. At its core, the ego harbors a terrifying emptiness. Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard observed that we frantically attempt to build our identity around something, anything besides God. We search for worth in achievements, relationships, appearance, or wealth. But these substitutes are like filling the Grand Canyon with pebbles. They simply rattle around in a space designed for something infinitely greater. This emptiness creates constant pain. Just as we only notice our organs when something's wrong, our ego continuously draws attention through hurt feelings and nagging insecurities. Ever wonder why a casual comment can ruin your entire day? Your ego is like an inflamed appendix, constantly signaling that something fundamental is broken. To cope, the ego becomes incredibly busy. C.S. Lewis captured this perfectly. Pride is inherently competitive. We don't simply want to be rich or smart. We want to be richer or smarter than others. Whether inflated with superiority or deflated with inferiority, both reveal the same overinflated balloon. Conventional wisdom prescribes high self-esteem as the cure for low self-esteem, but this paradigm is fundamentally flawed. Paul reveals something radical. "I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Then, indeed, I do not even judge myself." Paul has escaped the self-judgment game altogether, demonstrating freedom from the constant internal courtroom where we serve as both defendant and judge. The trap is inescapable. We can't meet other standards, which makes us feel terrible. So we set our own standards, but we can't meet those either, unless we make them embarrassingly low, which also feels terrible. Paul demonstrates gospel humility, not thinking more of himself or less of himself, but thinking of himself less. He acknowledges being the chief of sinners while maintaining tremendous confidence because he refuses to connect either failures or accomplishments to his fundamental identity. The person with gospel humility is like well-functioning toes. They work without drawing attention. When criticized, they objectively consider whether it's helpful. When praised, they receive appreciation without being defined by it. Most remarkably, they genuinely celebrate others' achievements as if they were their own. We live in a perpetual courtroom mentality, where every interaction becomes evidence in an ongoing trial of our worth. Our minds serve as both prosecutor and defendant, operating 24/7. We look to three primary sources for the verdict. First, others, constantly scanning for approval or criticism. A missed lunch invitation triggers days of self-doubt. Second, our accomplishments, the resume we hope will finally prove our worth. Third, ourselves, our harshest internal judge, replaying mistakes endlessly. This creates exhausting anxiety because the trial never ends. Even success provides only temporary relief before the question returns, "But what have you done lately?" We analyze text response times for hidden meanings and turn hobbies into performances where we judge our worth by how well we golf or cook. Social media weaponizes this courtroom mentality. Each post becomes evidence submitted to public opinion, with likes serving as mini verdicts. studies show heavy social media users report higher anxiety and depression, the natural consequences of constant judgment. Paul offers a way out, finding worth in God's unchanging verdict of love and acceptance, escaping the exhausting cycle of self-judgment and performance-based identity. Every identity system in human history follows the same pattern. Performance leads to verdict. We strive, achieve, and conform to standards, hoping these efforts will validate our worth. Whether through society's success metrics, Eastern spiritual disciplines, Islamic religious duties, or secular self-improvement, the fundamental problem remains. The verdict never fully arrives. The goalposts keep moving. Christianity uniquely reverses this pattern. Verdict leads to performance. The moment we believe, God declares, "This is my beloved child in whom I am well pleased." We receive Christ's perfect performance credited to us, with no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus. The verdict is settled before we've done anything to earn it. This reversal creates fundamentally different motivation. We're free to act from pure joy, not resume building. The student studies from genuine love of learning. The parent cares for their child from authentic love. The employee works excellently because good work itself has value. When God, the only opinion that ultimately matters, finds us more valuable than all the jewels in the earth, we're liberated from obsessing over others' opinions or our own self-image. The trial is over. The verdict is in. The greatest paradox of self-forgetfulness is that by losing our self-focus, we discover our truest selves. This contradicts our culture's approach, where self-discovery through introspection is treated as the path to fulfillment. Modern psychology emphasizes self-actualization through increased self-focus, analyzing feelings, understanding personality types, exploring desires. While self-awareness has value, excessive self-focus creates a prison of endless introspection, constantly monitoring our emotional state and wondering if we measure up. Jesus offered a counterintuitive path. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. This isn't self-hatred, but an invitation to freedom, finding identity through surrender rather than assertion. Notice how self-consciousness kills joy. The dancer who becomes aware of everyone watching suddenly loses their flow. Athletes describe peak performances occurring in flow, where self-awareness disappears and they become purely present. Our greatest fulfillment comes when we're absorbed in something beyond ourselves, deeply engaged in meaningful work, lost in service to others, captivated by beauty. This extends to relationships. Those desperately seeking validation often repel the connection they crave. Meanwhile, those secure in their identity develop the deepest connections, giving freely without demanding anything in return. The gospel uniquely enables this paradox by providing identity security that frees us from self-obsession. When our worth is settled in Christ, we're freed to look outward rather than inward and discover who we truly are. In a world selling identity through achievements and validation through likes, we've forgotten the most liberating truth. You are not on trial. The verdict is already in. You are more flawed than you ever dared believe, yet more loved than you ever dared hope. This paradoxical truth simultaneously humbles and exalts us, breaking both pride and despair. Transformation cannot be achieved through self-improvement techniques. We cannot forget ourselves by trying harder. We need something more radical, daily immersion in the gospel reality that in Christ, the courtroom is closed, the judge has ruled in our favor, and we are free. This pathway begins with honesty about our brokenness and belovedness. It continues with surrender, relinquishing self-justification. Then comes reception, actively embracing our identity in Christ, meditating on what it means to be fully known yet fully loved. Finally comes expression, living outward from this secure identity, practicing love not to earn approval, but because we've already received it. This isn't a one-time decision, but a daily renewal. Each morning presents a fresh opportunity to reject the courtroom mentality and embrace our verdict-secured identity. The trial is over. The verdict is in. You are free to forget yourself and truly live.